Welcome to All Learning Reimagined, the podcast that defines convention and redefines the purpose and practice of education. Here we venture beyond institutional boundaries to explore visionary ideas, transformative narratives, and pioneering voices shaping a future rooted in self-directed, heart-led learning. Whether you're a parent, educator, or curious mind devoted to lifelong growth, this is your space to challenge assumptions and co-create a more humane and intuitive approach to education. We believe that learning is a natural act. Together, we'll uncover stories, cultivate wisdom, and engage with practices that empower learning as an organic, soulful journey. Let's reimagine what education can be.
Hey, 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 g'day, and welcome to All Learning Reimagined, where passion meets possibility. And I'm Teresa, your host, bringing you a little ray of sunshine, one story at a time. And today I am so pleased to introduce one of my most favorite people in the world. And her name is Jean, and she grew up in South Africa. I'll let her tell you her story. And one of the things that I really admire about her is that as an education leader over the years, she has had amazing success teaching Indigenous children in North Queensland. And I could probably talk for a couple of hours on all of the incredible achievements that she's had, but I just really wanted to bring Jean on today so that she can share some of her stories and let you listen to the harmonics of her voice and feel the love that radiates through everything that she says. And I know that Jean has a soft spot for underprivileged children, but we're not sugarcoating it today. We're going to what's raw and what's real and what's actually happening in a lot of schools out there. And I do want to preface this by saying, because of the amazing success that Jean had as a leader, that actually led to her becoming a target for the whole tall poppy syndrome. So people in Australia will know exactly what I'm talking about. If you're in another country, it's pretty much people not liking it when you're a little bit different or when you have that success. They like to stay in their box of whinging, or they want to have that status quo. They don't like it when you step up and you change and you have that resonating success. And unfortunately, Jean was a target of that. And it had a huge effect on the shift of the direction of where she's going and what she's done since then. So that perspective is something that's going to be a little flavour and part of the conversation today. So we can have a reality check on where we're at and what we would like to see. So Jean, my beautiful Jean, welcome, welcome.
Thank you, Teresa. And that introduction was a bit over the top.
Not me, never. It's not over the top. It's absolutely true. You can hear the truth in my voice, Jean. Don't be so humble. Okay, so my first fancy schmancy question of the day is, what does the power of unconditional love mean to you?
Unconditional love sounds wonderful. It's one of those catchphrases. But actually, it's one of the hardest things in the world for anybody to implement in their daily dealings with people, because people don't always behave the way you want them to behave or the way you expect them to behave, or even in the way you think you deserve to have them treat you. So I guess what it means is that you have to let people be who they are. And if, you know, as has happened to me on many occasions, a child has told me to F off, which if you knew the background I grew up in with strict German Catholic nuns, they'd have died with their legs in the air if they'd heard one of the pupils telling them to F off. But I kind of got over that, and I began to see the anger that is seething around in many of those young bodies, and I saw the guts that it took to challenge the authority figure. The unconditional love is just accepting people for who they are without judgment. It's hard.
I agree, and I feel like we've almost grown up in a society. Well, I can only speak for Australia, but where judgment is everywhere. We're expected to judge. I mean, look at report cards, for example. Everything is judged. It's not have you made progress. It's we're going to judge you and label you. And it always breaks my heart when you've got a student who has tried so hard and they have made huge leaps in progress, and yet they still get that D or that E on the report card, and it just breaks their heart. And it just goes against everything that you can feel. It just doesn't feel right.
No, the system is broken. It's badly broken. And, that's the first thing that has to be changed. But that's big. That's, an individual who's a teacher in a classroom can't change the system, but you can change the way that you implement the system. Children don't need to be judged. They need to be recognized for what they're good at and what they're interested in, and just allowed to flourish in those areas. I'd have
So,
been a much, much happier child without having to do maths.
oh, well, let's face it, you can embed maths and literacy and the arts and science into everyday activities that we do. You don't necessarily need to sit in a classroom with four walls to do any of that learning, that's for sure.
No.
Are you able to share any experiences of when you felt that unconditional love has made a difference? I mean, out of all the things that you've done some incredible things. Can you share a story with us?
When oh, I can share many. When I was running the last school I was at in North Queensland, which was a school for Indigenous kids. So we had about 630, mostly, well, all Indigenous, except for a couple of white children and one African child. And yeah, I think that was it. And they were there. The African child was there because their mother was teaching there. But the white kids were kids who'd just failed over and over and over in state schools, been expelled, been thrown out. And eventually the mother came to see me and said, could she enroll them at our school? And I said, yes, no problem. And they flourished. They fitted in well. The Indigenous kids accepted them, and they became like white Indigenous kids. But we also had so many Indigenous kids are in serious trouble most of the time. And we had a group of boys who were about 15, I suppose, around that age. And they were handfuls. And there were about, I think, five of them who'd got into trouble for the umpteenth time with the police. And this time the police had rounded them up and they had to go to court. And so I always sent one of our guidance officers, who was a Papua New Guinean man, to go with them to court. And I said to him, this time they're going to want to put them into juvenile detention. So tell the judge that if they release the boys, we will take responsibility for them. And so they did that. And of course, the police and the yes, take them. You know, you take responsibility. We don't want to have to deal with it. So we had these five naughty boys. They were nice boys. They were lovely boys, actually. And I asked them the next school day to all come to my office. I told them they were all going to become boarders. And we got funding for boarders. So I rented a house in a local suburb close by and got a Torres Strait Islander man to move into the house to supervise them. And he was just like a dad for them. And then I called them into my office one day and I said, I've got a job for you boys. So they looked apprehensive, thinking they were going to get into big trouble. But I didn't even mention the other stuff, you know. And I said, we've got some boys in the upper grade of primary school who I think are starting to become bullies. And I want you boys to become their mentors.
Oh, I
And
love that.
I trust you boys because I've watched you, which I hadn't done. And you know, I've seen you're real gentlemen. You're supportive of each other. You are good team players. You know, and I really sort of told them. They stood there looking at me with their mouths open, and I said, "So every morning tea time, I want you to go down. I'll give you the boys' names, and I want you to do things with them, just like play games with them or kick a football around, but just chat to them about what they should do." And I said, at the end of the term, I will reward you by buying each of you a ticket to go to, what was that football team called? I know nothing about sport, but I know that Indigenous kids love it.
Yeah.
The Broncos, was it Broncos?
Broncos. Yeah,
Anyway,
Broncos football.
and Townsville, so it was a car trip away, you know. And they were just like ecstatic as far as they were concerned. They already had their tickets, you know. Anyway, these boys really stepped up. They did a marvelous job. The man who looked after them in the house was fantastic. He was like a real dad, you know. He was strict. He wouldn't let them go out. He wouldn't, and he cooked good meals for them. You know, and what did that take? The cost of some football game tickets.
The thing is, though, they obviously felt safe, and you were meeting their needs of what they needed.
And I wasn't telling them that they were bad people. I was saying to them, you are good people. I like what you do. I've watched you. You're good leaders. You know, you're kind to people. And if you keep telling people often enough, they believe it, and that's who they become.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And let's face it, we all smile in the same language. Well, I think my heart's smiling right now. I can just imagine their faces, actually, when you were talking about that in the office, because how many experiences would they have had being dragged into a principal's office or you know, someone with authority and been told something that they believed in? That's a game changer, that is. That's amazing.
Very, very easy with kids who've been neglected, kids who've never felt safe, kids who have low self-esteem because they've been told they're rat bags their whole lives. You know, they've just got to change the story.
Absolutely, and we've all got the power to do that. That's one of the reasons why I really enjoyed going into teaching and mentoring because of the way that you could make a difference, just one person at a time. And sometimes it's just that kind word, just that gentle listening and helping them believe in themselves. There's just nothing better, actually, than watching them bloom where they're planted.
Yes, that's all it is. And we're all the same. We're human beings. We want to be loved. We want to be appreciated. We want to be recognized, you know. Like how many teachers look at children when they walk into the school grounds and greet them as if they really, oh, you're the one and only person I really want to see. Most of us don't. You know, I just, it's easy, really. It's not difficult. And, you know, I say that, but as soon as you start behaving that way towards students or whoever it is, it's as if that demon that lives around the place and stuffs things up does something to say, oh, so you think, you know, unconditional love is the way to go. Well, cop this one. And, you know, something awful will happen and you think, oh, I'm over this. I just want to have a temper tantrum and wail and beat my fists and say it's not fair, but it doesn't work. Whereas turning
And
it around
there's a lot
and
of sad cases out there, you know, and sometimes I'm always conscious of the fact that the words that I use have a lot of power. The energy that I bring to a classroom can shift the whole room. Like you can feel it. And because it's so contagious, your energy is contagious and your emotions are contagious, with that self-regulation. And when you say, oh, you've been away, I hope you're feeling better, we really missed you, it's really great to see you back. It doesn't cost anything to say something kind. And for some of these children, it might be the only time they've heard a kind word in that day or even in that week because of some of the sad circumstances that they are in. So I really admire the approach that you took.
Well, I was watching some video clips of Alice Springs, and you know, the kids in Alice Springs are just off the planet. And it seems to be getting worse. And in this video clip I watched, there were a whole bunch of young people all sort of squashed together in a little group, and they were sitting down on the side of the road, and I don't know how many police officers were patrolling around them. And then a woman came walking past, and this police officer stopped her by, you know, physically stopping her and said, "Where are you going?" And she indicated she was going up the road, and he said, "No, you go the other way." And he talked to her, honestly, you wouldn't talk to your dog like that. And I just thought, well, he's going to have a lot of success in managing her behavior in the future. You know, she'll just hate him. And then what do you achieve? Those kids, they're the most broken that you could ever come across anywhere in the world. And they're not dealing with it the right way.
Well, that reminds me of the conversation that we had yesterday, which was it takes a village to raise a child. Well, it depends on what type of village that you grow up in, because some villages, you know, are very dangerous places. There's a lot of abuse, and it's not safe for that village to raise the child. But in the conversation, we were also mentioning that if you are happy to walk past and not do anything about what's in your backyard or what's in your own household or what's just even in your own neighborhood and not willing to step up and help care for everybody. Everybody's responsible for the people around them. You don't have to go out and save the world. You just need to start at your own doorstep and show a bit of kindness and caring. And if everyone on the planet did that, that unconditional love would just spread far and wide. And then we wouldn't need the crime and the abuse would make such a difference.
We have the most wonderful opportunity right now in Australia with the growing homelessness situation. And people will drive past and see people in their tents, whole families living in a tent in the pouring rain, and they'll go, "Oh, isn't that dreadful?" But then that's it.
That's right.
And often people just don't have the wherewithal to kind of feed another family or to put them up or whatever it is. But sometimes they don't even need that. They just need somebody to talk to, somebody to show a bit of care, like, if we all did that.
I agree. And it's little things. I remember, well, actually, when I taught in London, I had quite a few children that were, I can't even begin to explain the poverty that they were living in. And I would have a bowl of fruit in the classroom so that I knew that they could come and they could have something to eat. And they had face washes and they had toothbrushes. So I knew that they could come in and they could have something to eat and then they could clean themselves because some of them were filthy. They hadn't had showers or baths or whatever. But just that sense of getting that food, clean water, and having someone give them that little bit of attention made a huge difference. It was amazing how much they really opened up, and then they could focus on their learning because they were just in a better headspace, heart space.
And they felt safe.
They felt safe. Yeah, it's those whole needs. It's the glass of things, isn't it? And when I do encounter, naughty children, everybody's naughty sometimes, or that sort of behavior. The first thing I ask is, why are they doing this? What need are they trying to fill? Is it the sense of belonging? Is it a power need? They want a sense of freedom? They need choice. It's always going back to, how do I own this? What have I done? Have I stepped on their sovereignty? Am I being too controlling? Because that's what we're expected to do as a teacher. You're basically grown up in this situation where the teacher is the boss and the children just sit down and do what they're told. Well, should it be that way? Because we're controlling their behavior. Is that meant to be growing, critical, self-managing, self-governing human beings? Beautiful light. So, yeah, I do question quite a lot of times the methods to our madness and wonder. Sometimes we do things because we don't know any better, but when you know better, you have a chance to do better.
Yes, and I think people who go into a classroom, for example, and it's chaos and they can't get control, and they sort of absolutely bust a gut trying to get that control. Whereas if they just sat down and relaxed, didn't try and control anyone, just watched. Soon the kids calm right down, and then they think, "Hey, hang on a minute, this person's not behaving like they should behave."
I agree.
It's quite a confrontational process, but I think that's why we all go into things like teaching, because we've got all sorts of lessons to learn ourselves.
Well, sometimes I wonder if I'm learning more than students.
Well, I'm sure you are.
Oh, learning right alongside them, that's for sure. Absolutely. And when I think about how much I've changed, even just in the last 5 years, let alone the last 3 decades in education, so much has changed. It's actually a beautiful thing to watch. Well, I have one final question for you today, and that is putting it out there, Jean, if you could imagine the future. So if you could, wave a magic wand and learning is reimagined, what would that world look like or sound like or feel like to you?
That's dependent on so many things, isn't it? But I'll go back to my area of expertise, if you can call it that, which is Australian Indigenous education. I have taught in Africa, completely different story. Australian Indigenous education, they're probably the hardest kids in the world to educate. So I wouldn't try and do it the way it's done. Wouldn't put them in classrooms. I'd have schools, forest schools with, classrooms that were actually like home economics rooms where they could go and make their own lunch, or there'd be a lot more freedom of choice. And if they didn't feel like doing cooking today, well, they could go and run in the forest and build cubbies or whatever. But, that doesn't then produce somebody who's going to be a lawyer, which I think is probably a good thing.
Yeah, it's a where is the balance, isn't it? Because
Yes.
you've got a lot of forest schools in the world that are thriving, and then you have, I mean, the AI schools that are popping up everywhere as well. There are no teachers in these AI schools. The children, it's run entirely by artificial intelligence, and the children are taught 2 hours a day, and then the rest of the day they are actually going out and doing life skills and in the community. It does make me wonder about the shift and where we are. It feels like we're on the precipice of change for education.
I agree. And a big thing too, because it's caused so much misery in so many kids' lives. It's, I mean, I have a son who, when he was in grade one, when he started school in grade one, he wouldn't sit down at the desk. And the te his teacher, who was a lovely young woman, she said to me, "Look, I just cannot get him to sit, and he just stands at his desk all day." So I asked him after school that day. I said, "Look, why won't you sit down to do your work?" And his response was, "Because when I sit down, the bones in my bottom poke through." Like, he was pretty skinny and the hard seats, so he chose to stand all day.
Oh my goodness. Oh my
Yeah,
goodness.
he shouldn't have. He hated school. He loathed it. He just wanted to run free.
Yeah.
And as an adult, he spent all his adult years working in environmental projects in Africa, and northern Mozambique and the Central African Republic. And
Yeah.
so he's found his niche, but
That's
yeah,
amazing.
we're not all the same. I guess that's the
And thank goodness for that. I mean, who wants to be like, we're not clones. We don't want to be all
no,
the same.
all I think some of us are.
Oh, well, possibly. That's a whole nother conversation, Jean. We've actually run out of time today. Oh my gosh, I'll have to get you back because there's so much that we can talk about. But I do want to say thank you for your time and your energy, your precious time and energy, and sharing that with us today. And for everybody else that's listening, I encourage you to go out and explore and experience and live learning and from that heart space and ask yourself the same question, what does unconditional love mean for you? Thanks, everybody. That's all we've got time for today.
Thank you for joining us on All Learning Reimagined, where passion illuminates the path forward. Remember this: the future of learning doesn't arrive from above, it begins within. You are the spark, the shift, the living answer to education's silent call for transformation. So stay curious, stay awake. Let inspiration be your compass, because how we learn today is not just personal, it is profoundly generative. It shapes the very architecture of tomorrow's world. We are not separate from the system. We are its evolution. Until next time, trust the wisdom of your own unfolding and let your life be the lessons that light the way for others.
Ha ha ha!